Blog Talk Radio.
Sound of Options show for December 22nd, 2013, with Richard Olson and
Sherry Edwards with a very, very special guest. We're simultaneously
excited about the guest.
Yes, well, a lot of people are. We got a lot of mail on this one. We're having trouble with WebEx for those of you who usually join us. We don't have a lot to show you anyway, so go over to Blog Talk Radio and listen. Because Cisco has done some kind of upgrade on WebEx, and I've got some kind of incompatibility. So 347-850-1407 is the number there. Richard will be monitoring the chat, and you can ask questions that way. I will keep working on this and maybe find my way in. In the meantime, we are here from Sound Health Options to share information and ideas in support of freedom, integrity, and authentic self. We concentrate on self-health, self-responsibility, support of humanity, and we want to put health back into the idea of health care. We're obligated to say that we are a registered 501c3 nonprofit. We are doing this for educational purposes. What else are we obligated to tell him, Richard?
We have a bad attitude from time to time, and either one of us can jump on a soapbox at the drop of a hat.
I love that. Well, in recent years or months shows, we've been talking about some things going on in the military that neither one of us liked. A few months ago, I discovered that people in the military have to pay for their own meals, their own housing, their own uniforms, ammunitions, and guns, and that set me off. We were also doing a research project on post-traumatic stress disorder as part of a project we did with the Army on traumatic brain injury. And I just happened to notice these guys that we were working on that the Army sent us all had similar kinds of things going on. So as an aside, not from our contract, but as an aside, we put together a PTSD software program, and the military finally gave us permission to share that with the public. So we're going to talk about that a bit. Then along comes this stuff with the budget recently, that over, I think it's 6 years, they're going to cut $10 billion out of veterans' handicap and retirement, cost of living. Now, that ticks me off because there's $2 billion for publicity for Obamacare. Now, they think more, whoever's doing this budget, thinks more of Obamacare publicity than they do of retired and handicapped veterans. Now, I can't say what I really mean. Yes, I can. We can use our new cuss word. I'm fracking ticked off. How's that?
That's excellent. Absolutely. I could jump right on there. I just can't believe that, I could get into a rant about that. I just find it appalling.
Despicable. It's worse than appalling. I can't think of a dirty enough word to call these people. Then I find out that the military is having to pay for their own insurance. They send them over there to get maimed and shot at, and they have to pay to get patched up. I'm ticked. I'm just really fracked off. Then when I said to the universe, I want a way to help. So we tried to put together a project for PTSD, and we gave away the software. And like four people took advantage of us giving away the software for PTSD, and we never heard back from any of them. And I'm like, universe, what's going on here? We need somebody to help us with. And then, about 3 weeks ago, somebody appeared at our door, a very smart, very savvy, very dedicated, wounded warrior, a veteran, who knew all about this, knew much more than I did. As soon as she walked in the door and we started talking, it was like we'd known each other for 100 years. So I'm going to let her tell the story from her walking in the door about who she is, why she's here, and the phenomenal project that's been created by her presence. Mel?
I'm tearing up, Sherry. That's great. if you guys seen the email that came out and all the Facebook ranting I've done, I'm Melody Barnhart. I am a recently, I wouldn't call mentally retired, but I recently am honorably discharged from active duty. And I had a lot of problems with the military. I actually got lucky to find out about this place. My mother-in-law, the amazing woman she is, she works here, and she likes to single-handedly cure everybody. So after she got actual wind of all the problems and everything I was having between just everyday life and the struggles that me and my husband are going through as a couple, she said, hey, do me a favor and, you know, just entertain me. So I locked myself out of the house my first day here visiting in Ohio, and I had to come to her work to get the keys, and as soon as I walked in the door, you know, I got that warm, fuzzy feeling. Like, there was a beacon of light, like I was supposed to be here. And she introduced me to Sherry, and Sherry just gave me a glimpse of all the good that she wants to do, especially for the military. And I knew that it not only personally affected me, but affected millions of people that I've come in contact with while being in the military. You know, and it was something that I, for the first time in 15 years, got excited. I wanted to come. I mean, I volunteer more hours here than probably her staff works. I mean, I'm at home on the internet. I'm here every day, you know, researching new ways to help out. And it just is. Like, it's been a blessing to even come here.
You had a diagnosis of PTSD.
Yes.
And that was part of your discharge. Are you allowed to tell us about how that came about?
I am, actually. But before I do, let me just explain that these are all my personal views. It's no reflection on the military whatsoever, no matter what branch of service. Personal opinion, so don't come back and sue me. I've done 3 deployments to different theaters and things like that, and I would easily go on a deployment, do everything I had to do to get home, and wouldn't blink an eye at it. But my last deployment, it was hard for me to shut down the whole, you know, you're not in a combat zone anymore. There's no reason to be skeptical of everyone's intentions and things like this in my everyday life. So getting up in the morning, I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to bed at midnight, and I was hardly sleeping. I was scared to keep doors unlocked. You know, I would be with my son and just skeptical of everybody who came in contact with him. My husband was still on deployment, and then going into work was, you know, here's a person like me who I've been in these theaters and seen the things they were doing to people and been a part of it. And then I go into a job every single day where I sit behind a desk and I'm expected to do paperwork for these people who have never been in that area. You know, they've never been in that type of scenario. You know, they, excuse the term, but they've been paper pushers and that's been it. So for them to try to relate to me and understand what I went through, and instead of helping me or saying, you know what, you're kind of off today, you know, they were throwing more and more at me to make everything more and more stressful. You know, it was a short command. We didn't do anything major, but we were there till 9 o'clock at night doing one piece of paper. I mean, it was like they were trying to make their own war at home. Like, these people, sometimes I would get the feeling that they didn't like their families. The only time I was happy was with my family, but I'm sitting here in an office with these people who would rather sit in this office than go home.
Were you in war zones?
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
I was all over Iraq. I was in Tikrit, Mosul, Kirkuk, Baghdad, Balad, in Afghanistan. I was in Bagram and Leatherneck, and I did time at Guantanamo Bay.
Are you allowed to tell us what you did?
In Guantanamo Bay, I did intel reporting. So I pretty much just compiled reports and analysis from the stuff that our three-letter agencies were pulling. In Iraq, I, you know those little prisons that don't exist? Well, they existed, and I worked at one of those. So we would move, you know, intel back and forth between different compounds, and, you know, we would move our fresh caps back and forth between the different compounds and things like that, and, you know, we were responsible for the care, custody, and control of them. In Afghanistan, I did the same type of stuff, and then I worked in a bigger prison where it was my job to make friends pretty much with these, you know, with these detainees, and some of them convicted. It was my job to make friends with them so that they would build a rapport with me and feel comfortable and trust me so that they would tell me different things that were going on throughout the cities and the prison and things like that. I actually created two different initiatives where we'd literally eavesdrop on them while they were out the rec yards and collect, like, words that could be code for things, and we would translate it from Pashto and Dari in Arabic, and we would translate it to English, and we would give it over to the guard force, and we would give it over to, you know, the commanders and the three-letter agencies, and they would look into it.
So you had, like, a double life.
Yeah, pretty much.
When we did a show a couple weeks ago on Benghazi, and we looked at Obama's voice and the guy who says he was there in 60 Minutes said he recanted. He really didn't. And I showed that to Mel, and I said, just check this out. And she was reading it as a draft, and I said, wouldn't that be valuable to the service? And she said, we have so much more than this in the way we interrogate people than just using a vocal print. So are you allowed to talk about that at all?
No, I can't, actually.
Okay. So can I ask, do you do mind control or games with these detainees?
Prior to the whole Abu Ghraib, they would use tactics like that. They're pretty much scare tactics and manipulation tactics. But now they go in pretty much, you know, we'll have people like I used to do, like our counterintelligence agents. They'll collect hard-as-rock data, you know, or they'll have their analysts collect hard-as-rock data, and they'll know this, and they'll use that as a jumping point for whenever they do, you know, interrogations now, you know, just to get the baseline of if they're lying or if they're not lying or, you know, do you really know so-and-so or, yeah. So they're definitely humane. It's humane in all the interrogations that they do.
Okay, well, that's kind of what I was skirting around. Was any of it in?
Yeah, we have, actually, we have agencies like ICRC, which is the International Committee of the Red Cross. They would drop in and do spot checks on everything, like everything to make sure the temperature in all of our buildings stayed at 72 degrees. And, you know, they definitely oversee to make sure that everyone is taken care of and treated humanely.
Then when they had Bradley Manning in jail and they turned him down to 64 degrees or something, that's to be considered inhumane? We did it to one of our own people in our own soil?
That I have no idea about, but I just know that in theater that they are very, very, very intense on making sure that the military and the three-letter agencies take care of, you know, ultimately what they're trying to do is just make sure that there's no reason to start even more than what's going on. I mean, something as small as the changing of the temperature to not having, you know, challah meals is something that could probably start an international incident.
Would you explain what the term in theater means?
In theater is, you know, outside the United States, it's pretty much while you're in an area dubbed a combat zone, pretty much. Like being in Iraq is considered being in theater. Being in Afghanistan, in theater. Kuwait, in theater.
Richard, do you have a question about her training?
I do. In the context of your training, was there anything done for your mental benefit in the stress? I mean, just the rigors of what you're doing is one thing, but is there any way along the way where soldiers are given, or you were given, any kind of, like, I want to call it debriefing, but I don't really mean that because I know that means a different thing. But are you given any kind of support for your own mental state while you're in this, you know, ongoing state of stress? Stress seems like such a soft word compared to the reality.
Prior to everything, the first thing they hand you is this thing called an M-Wave, which pretty much helps you, you know, control your breathing, and it helps you de-stress. That thing literally sat in the bottom of my sea bag my entire deployment. I don't think I ever pulled it out, like, not even once. And then prior to even starting this for, like, missions like I was on, the first thing they do is they put you through a psych screening. You know, you take your Asperger exam. You know, you take three other personality profiling exams. You sit down with, you know, you sit down with a psychologist, and you sit down with another member of the team that's going to be leading you. And they go through questions and answers and make sure everything's okay to see if you are a good fit for it. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people, it's not, you know, especially when it comes to the different services, like the Army, from day one, the Army, like, embeds in your head, hey, you're combat. That's your job. You're infantry, you're combat. This is what you're going to do, you know. You're soldier first, job second. The Navy, on the other hand, is more of a, here's your rate, but be, you know, be flexible for other things that could come your way. Like, yeah, you may be a boatswain mate, but tomorrow you could be, you know, you could be pulling plumbing on a ship. Like, it's never just one thing. I mean, that's what the Navy is. Actually, I think that's one of their better capabilities, is the fact that they do have you take on more than just your responsibility. But in my case, I've always been the type of person who I'm a very forward thinker. I will do what is expected of me. I will block out all emotions. I mean, I think that's why I'm so good at my job. But in my personal case, it was everyday life that stressed me out. I mean, being in a combat zone, I was completely okay with. But, you know, it was day-to-day paperwork and traffic and bills that kind of sent me over.
Was it any of your leadership that didn't know what they were doing and put your life in jeopardy that caused the problem?
My leadership. You could do a 10-hour show on my leadership.
Not yours. I meant the people over you.
Yeah, I think leadership in the military as a whole is just, I'm not going to lie to you, it's one of the primary reasons why I got out as fast as I did. I mean, I had 12 years in. And for me to just to give up everything and just say, okay, time to go. I mean, I made first class, which is an E6. I mean, it wasn't like I was at the bottom of the barrel. But just the way that these people who are in leadership positions run things. I mean, I never worried about the fact that they threw us on the ground to fight and everything else like that while, you know, we were making as much as we did. But you had all these big wigs who were sitting in an office somewhere making three times what I did. Because I understand you get paid for the decisions you make. But why are we paying you so much to make stupid decisions and to be poor leaders? Like, it just, it immensely is just ridiculous the way that this whole system works.
And did that put people's lives in jeopardy because they didn't know what they were doing?
It's more of the, they want to see the outcome rather than what it's going to take to get to that outcome.
You told me a story about you having a medical issue.
Mm-hmm.
And could you just tell it to them like you told it to me, because I was fracked off there too.
Oh, poor Sherry. Last year around this time, me and my husband, we've had a few issues in trying to conceive a baby. And, you know, I had a miscarriage at work, and so we were trying to get pregnant, but we weren't expecting it. And, you know, I was that person who I was doing the ovulation strips, and, you know, they kept coming back negative. And after 30 days of that, I thought maybe my strips were broken, so I threw a pregnancy test in there, and it came back positive. Well, I went into work, and I told my chain of command, I told my corpsman chief, and I told my department chief, and you know, I said, hey, I took this test and it came up positive. I'm pregnant. I'm pretty sure of it. Well, everyone was like, okay, well, go over to medical, get a blood test and everything like that. Well, during the entire month that I was taking, you know, that I was using these ovulation strips, I was bleeding. So I went over to medical and I told them what was going on, and they said, yeah, it's a positive pregnancy test. I said, well, is it okay if you guys check me again tomorrow? I said, or the day after. I said, because I've been spotting this whole month. And they said, yeah, no problem, you know. So I go into work and I tell my chief what's going on. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm still, you know, spotting, and, you know, they're going to test me again in another 2 days. He said, fine, just don't make this an everyday thing.
Don't make it a what?
An everyday thing.
Don't be pregnant every
day. No, don't make me having to run to medical an everyday thing. You know, we had a lot of work that had to be done at, you know, pushing papers. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe my one body meant that much here that, you know, if I was gone, the whole office would go to hell. Ooh, I can't say that, huh?
Yeah, you can say
okay.
That.
Okay. You know, the whole office was going to go downhill, and, you know, the mission wouldn't continue, and, you know, Obama himself is going to come here and be like, hey, by the way, why aren't you at work? I mean, that's how it felt to me. Like, it was a major deal. I felt pretty important. So I said, okay, it won't be an everyday deal. So I went, you know, before work and got my blood test done and stuff like that. And it was that my HCG, which is the hormone that detects your pregnancy, it wasn't that it was declining, but it was staying the same, but it was dropping by 1 or 2 points. Not enough for it to be a miscarriage, but enough for it to be a healthy pregnancy. Well, I called my doctor, and my doctor called me back, and my chief answered and didn't relay the message. Apparently, me calling back my doctor wasn't important to give me the message for. So I was starting to get worried, and I went outside, and I called her, and she said, yeah, I called you 3 times and left you 3 messages in your office. And I said, okay, well, what's going on? And she said, well, you know, I can't really hear you because I was on the flight line. She's like, your service is pretty bad. She was like, I'm going to call you back in 10 minutes when you're back to your office. So I go out to my office, and I didn't say anything about, hey, why didn't you give me my messages, you know, because that's not my call. You know, he's leadership. He knows what's best for me and what's best for, you know, our office, because that's why you're leadership in the military. You know what's best for your people. So the doctor finally calls back, and she says, hey, I need you to get to the emergency room immediately. And I said, why, what's going on? She says, well, we're pretty sure you're having a miscarriage, but we can't figure out why the HCG levels aren't going down enough. And at this point, I just started crying. And I mean, and it was bad because, like I said, I've been through a lot, and for me to cry over something like that, you know. So I tell, you know, my chief and, you know, the other person who works in my office, I said, listen, I'm supposed to be going to the emergency room immediately. Told my corpsman, I said, hey, I'm supposed to be going to the emergency room immediately. They told me it can wait until after work, that they don't need it disrupting my work. So after
wow.
I sat there and continued to cry, another person who didn't even work in my department, he stepped in and said, hey, what's going on? And I said, nothing. I said, but I really think this is something that I need to either go to the doctor or I need to go home for. And it was probably like a half hour before the end of the day. And I told him, and he said, listen, take off. If you get in trouble, I'll bite the bullet. I said, okay. So I ended up going home, and the next day I came in, and my Divo, my department officer, calls me into his office, and he says, listen, I need to know what's going on. And I was like, excuse me? And he was like, with you. He was like, you know, last week you were upset because of a hurricane happening in your hometown. This week you're upset because you couldn't go to the doctor's for your routine appointment. I said, my routine appointment? And he said, yeah. I said, in my hometown. I said, I still have family who lives there. I said, and my routine appointment is the fact that I'm having a miscarriage. And he said, okay, well, you know, we can talk about this. So he let me leave out of his office, and he said he would work on it. And, you know, here I am still bleeding, and 2 more days go by. And HCG is still kind of stuck there and everything like that. And they went and told my master chief, who in the military, like, your master chief is, he's pretty much your leader for all of your enlisted people, you know, all of your E8 and below, your E9 and below, like, he is your leader. Well, he tells me that I need to communicate my problems better, and maybe I should take some personal leave. Go home, take a break, take some personal leave. So I put in for leave that I was supposed to put in until my miscarriage passed, and they made me go to my command holiday party. So I showed up at a command event in the middle of my miscarriage, not knowing what was going on, pretty much on all kinds of pills from medical, because medical didn't know what was going on, so they just popped me full of ibuprofen and sent me on my way. And everyone at the place pretty much came up to me and had a different, everyone at the holiday party came up to me and had a different story for while I was on leave. I said, really? I said, because this is none of the reasons why I'm on leave. Well, it turned out that my leadership decided to go and start rumors. So the next day, my husband took me to go get my blood test and everything like that, and, you know, they were still tracking my blood work, and it wasn't falling, and my husband took me in to have a DNC done, and when they did the DNC, there wasn't anything, there wasn't a fetus, or there wasn't anything to be misconstrued as a miscarriage. So they did another ultrasound, and come to find out I had an ectopic pregnancy that ruptured, and I had about 5 inches of blood sitting in my stomach.
Ectopic, so, on the fallopian tube. The egg hadn't reached the uterus.
So it had ruptured, and I was internally bleeding for about, they said it was a slow leak for a few days, and then it got worse.
That's incredibly painful.
So probably
painful.
About 5 days.
That's incredibly painful. She told me this story last Friday, and she said that they gave her like 15 minutes to get over it. And I'm stomping around this office. I am so ticked off and fracked out at people, and I couldn't figure out why until I just finally sat down and, you know, what's making me so angry? And this didn't even happen to me, although, yes, it did. I've had an ectopic pregnancy. I know how painful it is. And to have somebody just totally ignore somebody, like you're an expendable piece of the furniture, it doesn't matter if your leg got chipped or whatever, you know, suck it up.
Well, after when I was getting discharged from the hospital and everything, like, you know, the best was my husband's command. And honestly, like, this command, he complains about it, I complain about it, people who work there complain about it. But when he told them what was going on, they told him leave. They said, go be with your wife, go take care of her, go make sure she's okay. My command, they did. They told me, take 15 minutes, get over it, and get back to work. But when I was being discharged from the hospital, my husband was there with me, and they gave him my paperwork, and I told my husband, I said, well, let me call and let them know that we're dropping off my convalescent leave, which is, you know, whenever you get sick, they give you an extended amount of leave. I said, and to let them know it rolls into my holiday leave, because we were going to come back out here to Ohio for the holidays. And my husband told me, no, you're not going in. He said, I'll run your paperwork in, give it to the quarterdeck. And I said, okay, well, my husband ran it in and gave it to the quarterdeck person. They logged out, checked out on convalescent leave. So my chief ends up calling me later. Well, he didn't even end up calling me. He had another chief in the building call me. You know, hey, what's going on? I said, well, I had an ectopic pregnancy. I was internally bleeding. They put me on convalescent leave up until my regular leave. And then I'll be back after the holidays. And this chief told me, okay, well, did you drop off your leave? I said, yeah, everything got dropped off. It got logged in the quarterdeck. She said, we didn't receive any paperwork. So you're UA.
What is UA?
Unauthorized absence. It pretty much means I went AWOL from the military after a certain amount of time. It means I'm not at my place of duty.
So they just, you think they purposely lost these papers?
And they've done it to me before. That's why this didn't even, that's why I was happy my husband had the quarterdeck log it. So I called the quarterdeck and I said, hey, listen, they're saying that they never received my paperwork. And he said, I gave them directly to your chief. He said, and I logged it in the quarterdeck log. He said, you are accounted for. I said, well, can you please go show the log to the CO so that he knows what's going on? So they went and showed the CO, and the CO was like, okay, yeah, why is this an issue? She's on convalescent leave, you know, and everything else just happened from there. But what was great was when I came back from my leave from here, I didn't have a desk. They told me that I needed to go sit in another office because I was a problem to my office.
Is this where you told him to shove it?
No, this isn't where I told him to shove. I never got busted down, so I never told anyone to shove it. So I didn't have a desk. They told me it was being held for a reservist. I was told that I need to go sit into another office because I was bringing down the morale in the office and that I wasn't really doing work anyways. So they moved me down to the quarterdeck, which is our duty. You know, 24 hours you stay in this quarterdeck. And I got the lovely privilege of sitting there from 7 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon every day for our duty person. But I wasn't being punished. But every single day, at least 10 people a day would ask me, what'd you do? Why are you down here?
And did they give you an explanation, or are you allowed to ask?
No, they never gave me an explanation. They told me, you know, just to keep me and the, you know, the person, you know, my leadership separated because of how the situation got handled, and, you know, that it wasn't punishment. But to me, that seemed like punishment. I couldn't even go to the bathroom without getting a relief. I couldn't take a lunch. I wasn't allowed to go, you know, I wasn't allowed to go to the gym. So, you know, you leave me here at this desk, and you don't give me time to work out or anything, and then you expect me to be within standards. So my PRT right after that, they failed me.
What's a PRT?
It's the physical readiness test that we take twice a year. They failed me on it because I was, you know, over my max weight. But I wasn't clear to even work out. And whenever I went in to talk to my CO and my XO about the whole situation, apparently my new chief, she told me that I was supposed to route a request to have my PRT extended, and that I was supposed to go talk to the CO. But she never relayed this information to me, but she mysteriously thought that she did. So when I went in to talk to them, they had no idea I had an ectopic pregnancy, no idea that I was having family issues, because my leadership told them that I was on regular leave. And my master chief never debriefed them on the situation.
Is this an uneducated person that's doing this manipulation?
No, it's leadership.
Lack of?
And these are the people that do their PowerPoints every single year that gives them the right to be a leader.
You know, I think your people who worked with you ought to have been upset about your situation, but that's just me. I think they treated you in an incredibly horrid way, and there's been a lot of people come through here that had PTSD. They had similar kind of things that the people had their leaders had intellectual ability, but as far as any common sense, they lacked it totally. And it sounds like where you were.
Me personally, this is what I think, that honestly, I feel that we step into these positions, so mentally we're able to handle the things that they're doing overseas. I mean, we're agreeing to it. They're giving us pretty good briefs about what we're stepping into. But I think it's how we're stepping home and how the leadership isn't equipped or properly trained to deal with us in that capacity that they make it worse. You know, like, and it sounds bad to say, but I think even our families kind of lay into it a little bit. You know what I mean? We're over there living in, you know, definitely not conditions that we would want to see our families live in, to come home and it's like, you know, our families instantly expect us to be, you know, 100% dedicated to them. Well, you know, you weren't there for me for this past year for everything that I went through. It was these people. So, yeah, I'm still going to want to be a little connected to them. I mean, I'm not going to want to throw that away. There are certain things that we can't talk about, and our family expects us to, like, open up and, you know, hey, here's what I did every day. Like, it's funny. I actually, I met my husband when I was in Afghanistan. So, you know, I had that benefit. I mean, I'm not saying everybody run out and meet someone in Afghanistan and marry them, but my husband was, you know, Navy as well. And, you know, I think if it wasn't for the fact that he didn't know what I did every single day, it was funny. We were like good cop, bad cop. But I think it would have been a lot worse for me when I did get home than what it was.
I'm going to put a couple of things together, and you tell me if I'm wrong.
All right.
They put you in with these prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And wanted you to be friends with them, knowing that this was Middle East and women in leadership was not a good thing, and they probably looked at you with suspicion in the first place. So they used you as a woman in interrogation, but then turned around and negated you as a woman when you had an ectopic pregnancy. That's the way I see it. Is that wrong?
In so many words, no, you're pretty spot on. You're pretty spot on.
Well, you told me about some times, and I don't know if this was about sequestration, that you and your whole crew had to do without food. Are you allowed to talk about that?
I am. That was probably the worst experience of my entire life. 2011, when they had the big, huge government shutdown, military wasn't getting, you know, going to get paid, I was literally in the middle of nowhere, where if I needed to make a phone call, it was a two-hour convoy ride. We had one little tiny defect that pretty much fed the, you know, the non-existent personnel that worked on my compound, and, you know, us being non-existent personnel. And they said, hey, by the way, you guys might not get paid. So here I am with people in our building, and, you know, I have a son at home and his dad who's expecting money, and I had my own bills and everything else, and here I am in the middle of nowhere, not even able to get to a phone, and I might not get paid. So they started rationing our food really bad, and so it came down to literally, like, we were getting bare bottom of the barrel of everything. They were telling us if we could break into the MREs.
What's an MRE?
It's meals ready to eat. If you watch the movies, it's the little brown bag meals they get all the time with little hand warmers. Not the greatest of food. So I literally told everyone, and I think this is why my leadership didn't really approve of me when we were out there. I told everyone that if they didn't pay me, I was going to stand outside the building in a T-shirt that says, we'll work for food until they start paying us.
So you could at least have food.
Yeah.
So they're letting soldiers do without.
That's what they equip us for, though, is they do. My poor husband, he was in Afghanistan, and it was right after I left, and he didn't have water for I couldn't remember how long.
I'm going to get really ticked off here. Well, I'm already ticked off. I'm just going to say it out loud. We have these Congress people making all these rules about sequestration and the government shutdown and all this crap, and they can spend one or two terms and get paid for life. Now, here are soldiers laying down there, life and limb, and coming back and being totally not able to work, and, or they want to retire,
mm-hmm.
and the government now is taking away their retirement and pensions and cost of living. As a soldier, is that fair?
No, it's not, especially since we're moving to a more corporate America-type military. I mean, they have us doing these whole Lean Six Sigma belts, which is, you know, the same thing you would do in a corporate position. You know, and that's, it sounds bad, but that's what it's turning to. It turns into a more corporate military, but less benefits. They don't want to pay us in the long run. I mean, the way I see it is if someone dedicates 20 years to a job, they have an option to retire. Will their retirement be as much? No, it won't. But the military, the reason why we do have that 20 years to retire and we get the benefits that we do is because of the extensive trauma they put our bodies through, our bodies and our minds.
So you ended up getting PTSD over lots of things, not just how you were being treated.
They said that the least of my problems for PTSD was my deployments, that it was more of the leadership and the lack of it when I returned and the way that all of my situations were handled.
And they sent you to places you weren't supposed to be in the first place, and you couldn't tell your family you were there.
Yeah, I was sending my mom postcards from Ireland, and I didn't even know I was.
How does that happen?
I would email, and someone would write it out on a, you know, would either type it out on a postcard or, you know, and they would send it to my mom. My son got emails from Ireland.
So not only are they lying and abusing you guys, but they're not telling your families where you really are.
No.
Is that legal?
If it's going to protect a mission, yeah. Just like, and it's funny because military, it sounds bad, but I think that we're just as, we give ourselves the name that people actually predict sometimes, or actually the people, that's not the word I'm looking for, that actually people perceive, because OPSEC, ship's movement, which is like, you know, when the boat's going out, when the boat's coming in. I mean, I'm tons of friends. I used to be, because now I'm more picky about who I'm friends with on my social media, but, you know, I would see on there, oh, my husband's coming home on this day, and he's on this ship, or, you know, my husband's leaving for Afghanistan on this day, or, you know, this is what's going on at work. All that stuff can get your husband killed. It can totally be detrimental to whatever mission they're trying to do. So, I mean, things like that, like, that's one of I learned that that's one of my major activators, is pretty much military members being stupid. Like, my husband, me and him talked about it, and I deleted my Facebook for a while. Just because the fact that every time I would get on there, you know, it would turn into a huge rant. You know, and if it wasn't just on Facebook, I was ranting to him. I'm like, you know, I don't understand so-and-so. Why would you put this on there? Why would you do this? And why are you doing this? And my husband's like, just delete it. So after a while, I found out that that's one of my triggers, is the fact that I hold so much integrity and compassion for the military that when people treat it like crap or when people put other people at risk, it's something that it hurts. It gives me severe anxiety.
Do you think that what they did with the budget and attack, I don't know what the word is except attack, attacking the handicap and the retirees from the military, that they did that deliberately because they knew you were so passionate about protecting them?
I think that is just pure stupidity. If I get hurt on my job tomorrow, I can't go and claim workers' comp. You know what I mean? When I was active duty, I mean, I can't, you know, say, you know what, maybe this job isn't good, you know, maybe this is something that's a little dangerous for me. I'm going to get workers' comp, I'm going to train for a different job, you know. It's not, or I'm going to get unemployment, train for a different job. No, I could literally cut off, true story, I have a friend who cut off his fingertip. He was out of work for a week, and they brought him right back in to do the same exact job. Not saying, hey, is this something that you're going to be okay with? You know, do you think that it's poor training that you hurt yourself? You know what happened? No, because that's what they do with the military. They don't care what they do to us. They don't care if they mentally hurt us, physically hurt us, or if it's our job, our own stupidity. If it's our own stupidity, well, then that's another PowerPoint we sit through. That's not us learning how to do the job better. It's us sitting there watching, you know, a flip screen. It is. You're getting what you pay for pretty much with the military. You guys keep paying us like crap, don't want to put money into the right training, the proper equipment. You're going to get crap.
Is that why you feel like there's very little support for you if you get hurt or have a mental issue?
I know that there is very, very little support if you get hurt or have a mental issue. And I see it every single day, especially with young sailors and Marines and young soldiers. And I do. Every day I see it. No one wants to go to their leadership. I mean, I know people who get phone calls at all hours of the night who aren't even in any leadership position just because that one person needs to reach out to somebody and you're the only one that shows any compassion. They don't want to talk to their leadership because their leadership is concentrated on them. They're focused on themselves. Everything is about a good eval or a good fit rep or what award can I get out of this. No one puts their heart in it. No one looks out for their people anymore.
Is that why you got involved with Wounded Warriors?
I have a utter deep compassion for just veterans in general because, you know, I've been in long enough to where I've seen a slight change in the military and to just hear the stories of how it was and how much integrity and just, you know, the whole family orientation and just, and it does, like I live for it and I got involved with those organizations because I want to help people. I don't want people to suffer. I mean, I'm slowly getting better, and I want other people to start getting better. I don't think it's fair. No one should have to have hate in their heart for something they love for so long.
Richard, that fits in with the question you have.
Boy, there's a bunch of questions in there. One is, first I wanted to make sure that I got that right. When you talked about being discharged, they actually acknowledged that part of your PTSD was to do with your command chain in terms of they actually stated in writing. I'm not trying to bust you. I'm just trying to get – I want to make sure that you said this because it was amazing.
In my numerous counseling sessions, they did say that, you know, part of it was due to my current situation at my command, that it was an emphasis and a trigger.
And so once they give you the – diagnosis of PTSD, is there any offering of here's what we can do for you, or is it just medications and go away?
They hand you pills and send you to go away. They tell you if your command will allow you, you can come back for another appointment, but if your workload is too heavy, then, you know, you can always look to the VA.
And we have people here who work here who have been looking to the VA, and it's useless, according to them. It takes ages to get in. It's subpar help, and it's a pill and go away. Richard, do you have more questions?
I think I'm temporarily speechless, almost, or ranting, on the verge of ranting or speechless. I'm not sure which.
We've got a whole
Amazing.
Staff here that's been listening to these, what's really going on, and we're all ticked off. Tell the people more about the Wounded Warriors and how, did they help you, or are they?
I think that between the IA, it's Iraq Afghanistan Veterans Association, the Wounded Warrior Foundation, and the Naval Special Warfare Foundation, Disabled American Veterans, all organizations that I donate to and I stand behind completely. They do so much for veterans, so much for the community. I mean, the Disabled American Veterans, for free, you can turn around and bring them your medical record, and they'll help you compile all your information in order to turn it over to the VA for your disability claim. I mean, for free. They don't ask you for money. They don't ask you to join their organization, nothing. Naval Special Warfare Foundation, like, honestly, I've done spec war tours, and they do everything from children's support to veteran support to active duty and reserve. Just all of the those organizations, they always, you see them everywhere. T-shirts, you see them, you know, holding events, and just, I'm a big, big firm believer in joining veterans organizations and giving to them.
Well, we have to have a caveat here that there's a lot of people out there just shirking people for money, and 2 cents out of the dollar.
Oh, gosh, yes. Do your research. I mean, anyone can sit down and send you an email or send you a letter and say, oh, you know, I'm from here or I'm from there, and this is my story. I mean, look into it before you send money or do anything for, you know, just double-check their credibility. You can go to, just Google it, do veterans organizations, or and then follow through to their different websites. I mean, usually they'll have a phone number. You can call and speak to a live person. But I know people, especially around the holidays, you know, oh, this organization needs your money, and we support veterans. And so definitely do your research.
Some of it's poppycock. Richard, do you want to form your question? I could read it, but I don't really understand it here.
I think that somewhere back there, Melody, I think I heard you use the term talking about the corporatization of the military. Is that correct? And could you talk about that a little more? I think I know what you mean, and that's why I'm asking about it. In other words, you mean sort of the privatization? Is that what you were alluding to?
No, we call it corporate military. It went from, you know, rich in tradition and pride and integrity to everything is basically sold on, you know, it's political. The military has become political. Everything from who gets an award to who gets your, you know, the recognition to who gets to go to this school. Everything is about, you know, it's political. Like, it's funny. We joke around all the time. They do this thing in the Navy. If you're at a sea command, they'll cap, which is Command Advancement Program. They'll cap one person, you know, one person to E4 and one person to E5 and one person to E6. And you can always tell right before that comes around because everybody starts what we call politicking. You know, they may not have all their quals or they may not, you know, be the greatest sailor, but they'll go around and make friends with absolutely everybody if it means they're going to get your vote. So it is. It's become political and corporate.
Popularity.
Yeah, like, that's what it is. I mean, they don't care if you're a hard worker or if you stay late or what you get done. The minute you screw up that one time, you know, they're going to go into their board meeting and they're all going to talk crap on you, and then you're going to see everyone's opinion and everyone's whole perspective towards you change to push you to the outskirts.
When you got here and you saw what we could potentially do, you started forming a project in your mind. Would you talk about how what's here supported what you knew you wanted to do all along anyway?
From the moment I got here, I was not even going to, I'm going to tell you 100% truth. I was a little skeptical. I couldn't see how listening to, you know, one sound over and over again could fix years of me being broken. And then I had the pleasure of sitting with Ken, and Ken did my vocal profile. And after that, he did my Nana voice. And Ken, about literally, he just shook. I said, "What?" He said, "Wow." He said, "Have you looked at this?" I said, "No." He said, "Were you using your," he calls it my interrogator voice. He says, "Were you using your interrogator voice, or were you using your normal voice?" I said, "My normal voice. Why?" He said, "Because this right here states everything that Sherry said from the moment she first talked to you, that you're very intellectual and very, very into humanity." So I read the report, and I was like, wow. I was like, if this is right, what else could be right? So Ken did my vocal box, and he did my vocal profile, and, you know, we went over some of the dots and everything and, you know, some of the points, and he was like, "Oh, my God." He was like, "Did you know this? Did you know that?" I'm like, "Yeah, how do you know that?" And from that moment forward, I'm like, you know what, this is something that needs to be shared. This is something that people need to know about. I mean, I hate taking pills, and I feel like I spent 12 years of my life taking every single pill that the Navy handed me. Take this one for mood swings. Take this one for anxiety. Take this one for heartburn. Take this one for this. Take this one for this. I mean, I've never seen so many narcotics come in and out of my hands. I'm pretty sure drug dealers know what that feels like, but I wasn't a drug dealer. I was a service member. How are you going to put me on so much stuff and expect me to do a job, especially when I can hurt people? So to come here and know that I can sit down and listen to these tones and not have the side effects of all kinds of drugs and things in me. And
was it the good night's sleep that convinced you?
Oh, my God, that first night of sleep, Sherry, let me tell you, that was the best sleep I think I ever got in my entire life. After I took the class, Ken programmed a tone box for me. And, you know, he said, "Hey, when you listen to this box, you know, you want to listen to it at night or when you're in bed or something." He said, "I'm going to tell you," he said, "you're not going to get through the whole thing." He said, "But you're going to want to still listen to it while you're sleeping." I'm like, okay. I'm like, yeah, whatever. This box isn't going to work. I literally put this box on, and within 2 seconds, I felt like I was waking up, and it was because my mother-in-law was knocking on my door telling me it was time to get up. It was the first time I had deep, rested sleep. Like, I felt refreshed. I didn't need coffee. And usually I'm that person who I'll sleep for 3 hours, and I'll be waking up every 15 minutes to kind of clear a room or, you know, to go see what's going on outside the window, check on my son, make sure my husband's still breathing. I mean, but I really did. Like, I slept through the entire night.
So what, you've gone through the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You've taken the class.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's your project? Because that's the real deal that we want to share with people.
I am working on my own little PTSD project. I have 3 case studies already lined up. I have 2 of them for whenever I get back to San Diego. Marketing, definitely. Like, I want this to reach everybody. I think that's why I flooded everyone I know's Facebook the way I did, because it does. This needs to be shared. It's like having the big secret to, like, you know, the big secret to the fountain of youth and you keeping it all for yourself. Do you really want to be the only person at the end of the day that still looks like you're in the 20s and your friends are, you know, near death? No, you want to share it because you want to live vitality with everybody. My happiness, I want to share it with everyone. I want everyone who suffers like I do to know what it's like to finally just go to a grocery store and instead of wanting to slam your cart into the first person in front of you, you know, say thank you or excuse me or here, you know what, you go ahead. I want them to know what it's like not to have road rage or, you know, not just constantly just walking around angry. I want everyone to get rid of their wrinkles, their frowny, meany wrinkles. I want everyone to smile. And I do. I think this is the wave of the future. And I'm going to share it. I'm already practicing on all the software. And, you know, like I said, I have my own case study signed up. And I hope my friends want to reach out and let, you know, be my case studies too.
We've done a study with PTSD and created software, and Mel has convinced us to use it for this month. It is now up on Blog Talk waiting for you. It is free. We give away a free software every month, and this month it's going to be PTSD. There's the other software there, Abacus. There is a textbook. Mel, do you have an email where they can get in touch with you if they want to help? Because I'm going to ask them to do something.
I do. It's Melody, M-E-L-O-D-Y, dot M, like Marie, Barnhart, B-A-R-N-H-A-R-T, @gmail.com. Or you can reach me here for another couple of weeks at publicrelations@vocalprofiling.com.
I'm typing this in case you're hearing typing, vocalprofiling.com. I put both of those in the chat. What you have put together is a list of people we need to contact, and we want to do this for groups.
Mm-hmm.
And every community will give your community the softwares that they need to help these folks. We've put out paperwork that we know what we want to look for, at least what came up in the project that we already did.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to partner with a vitamin company that will make some good nutrients that we find consistently missing. We found two sets. On Happy Hour, we've already done this and shown you how to do it with the nano voice, like calcium, which is the note of D-sharp. Calcium, niacin, linoleic acid, and zinc. Those are the first four major issues of PTSD, and those are the people who don't know that they even have a problem. And the second layer is B5, choline, magnesium, and progesterone, and those are the ones that we see that are committing suicide. And we want to help any and all of them, but we can't do it all. We're going to have your help, so we figure the only way we can do that is to train you to do these evaluations, look at somebody's vocal print, and try to help get them some help. I don't know if there's a grants, if any of you know about grants that we could use to get them nutrients or to see a doctor or whatever. We are giving away what we are doing. If I could, I would give it everything away. Because that's my idea of being wealthy, the ability to give away anything I want to give away. So we're asking your help, and if you have anybody in your community who needs us, please use one of those two emails or write to me. Mine's easy, too. And Richard is saying to you that the replay of this will be on the Sound Health Options website on the left-hand side. What, in a half hour or so, Richard?
Usually, yeah, usually it renders out about 30 minutes after, but it's down on the lower left, and there's a player that has the last five shows, but I just want people to be able to pass that on to their friends because I think this is such a powerful show.
We had an email, well, we had several, but we had one particularly poignant email from a woman telling us about a young man, and she had several people in her family who had PTSD. But one of the young men, and this is her words, succumbed to PTSD and died Friday night. The funeral is tomorrow. We don't want that to happen. This guy was, according to the person who wrote to, a wonderful husband and father. He lives in Ohio. He was a Navy SEAL. We want to help to the point where this doesn't happen again. Because according to our guest, who she herself is a wounded warrior, there's very little help. There's lip service that they are helping, but they just took away part of the budget to even help these soldiers with this new budget. You want to say something?
Actually, right now, like our biggest key to getting us help are the families. I mean, pay attention to your family, you know, to your military member. Any change in behavior, things like that, call. I mean, the Veterans Affairs, and they have suicide hotline numbers and PTSD hotline numbers. They are more prone to take phone calls from the family members and to get help from the family members than the service member going in there saying, you know what, something's not right. So, I mean, definitely make those phone calls for your service member. I mean, if you're afraid of the backlash, just remember, at the end of the day, you're getting them better.
What should they look for?
Any change in behaviors. I mean, if they're digging trenches in your front yard, I would definitely call then. I mean, the whole clearing rooms, the uneasiness, the heavy drinking. If you had someone who was a drinker and all of a sudden they're not a drinker, I mean, that would be a sign. Like, you know what, maybe, you know, this person used to have a couple beers with me every Saturday, and now all of a sudden, you know, they don't do it. Or this person never drank before or had one or two beers, and now they're drinking a six-pack and within 20 minutes. I mean,
jumpy,
irritable, and, you know, just severe anxiety, not wanting to leave the house, you know, snapping for every little thing. You know your family and your husband or your wife better than anybody else. You're going to know if something is off. I mean, you're going to feel it in your gut. You're going to see it in their everyday actions. If you see something you're not too sure about it, call one of their friends. Call someone they were stationed with. Because next to you, they know your spouse probably as well as you do, if not maybe even a little better sometimes. So build that rapport with them. Make a system. I don't know how many times I can stress this. Make a support group. I mean, if they can't get into the VA to get help immediately, you're going to be what they fall back on. So, I mean, I'm not saying stage an intervention and make that person feel extremely uncomfortable, because I know that would do me in. But, you know, spend time with them. I mean, it doesn't have to be, let's say going out is what irritates them. Don't stay in the house. Watch a couple of movies. Don't go out and get, you know, Saving Private Ryan. But, you know, maybe a Ben Stiller flick or something funny. But just remember, you're going to be the person that your military member is going to depend on. So make yourself available for that. Reach out. You know, I'm not saying everybody should just, you know, run out and all of a sudden try to cure PTSD on their own. Take advantage of many of these avenues. And like I said, I suggest every single person who's listening, send me an email. I have nothing else to do. I'll email you back with all the information. I mean, Sherry, literally, she's working miracles, and no one else is realizing this, and if I could bottle half of the knowledge that she has, I would probably sell it. I would sell it to you guys in an obscene amount, but I'm not Sherry, and Sherry's trying to give you guys avenues to help each other. Take advantage.
We have a question from our audience. What are the four elements most affected by PTSD?
The four elements?
What is four elements? Peter, can you tell us what you mean by elements? Is it all mental, or do you mean they become depressed?
Oh, it's mental and physical and emotional and just, I mean, I know me personally, like, it went from, you know, I was getting sick every day. I was just so overcome with severe anxiety. I was just getting sick. I couldn't figure out if I was coming or going. I was shaking.
Crashes your immune system?
Just headaches constantly because I didn't know what I was doing. Sensitivity to light. Just, it's different for everyone. Like, you know, and it depends on what is bringing on your PTSD. I mean, you can get PTSD not just from being shot at or for the people you have to intervene with, but any traumatic event. Like rape can cause PTSD. Watching a family member injured in front of your face. A lot of people, especially children who are in those situations where, you know, they have abusive parents, you know, they develop PTSD. I mean, their symptoms are going to be a lot different than mine. Or
if they wanted more information, could they get that on one of the Wounded Warrior sites? They have an official site?
There's two off the top of my head that are specific to PTSD as far as the websites, but I don't have them on me right now.
We'll give you place on our site, and you can post there, maybe.
Okay.
Melody's blog.
Just remember, too, though, if you're going to go on Google and Google anything, look for something that has a .org, a .edu, just a .mil, nothing that's just .com. .com isn't really backed by anything, and it's usually just opinion. But look for something that has some credibility behind it.
What do you think, I know what you think, I want you to share it with our readers, because we're all stomping mad about it, about the vaccination they're trying to create to prevent PTSD?
I say just another 300,000 shots that I'm either going to have to avoid to get. Like, all my military people who are listening, you know you avoid that flu shot every year. And it's funny because sometimes you avoid it and you end up getting two. I don't know how they always get me with that, but that's how it happens. But I think it's a bad idea. I do. I mean, it's the same way with all these, you know, post-deployment, you know, where they pretty much give you the shots of, you know, the beta blocker. They pretty much stops all, you know, your brain functions. I mean, it's the same thing. You cannot prevent PTSD. Well, not that you can't prevent it, but you can't do it with a vaccine.
It's a natural response.
It is. It's when your body is stuck in that fight or flight, you know, and you just can't. And if you do that with a vaccine, then who knows what else you're going to disrupt.
Well, with measles and flu and things like that, it's a pathogen. It's a critter that's invading you. And so I can see maybe where they could be justified with that, but I cannot see where they're trying to get you a vaccine to negate a normal body function.
I mean, if you think about it, okay, let's say me and four people all go and get this vaccine for PTSD. Well, what happens if, you know, like in a combat situation? I'm not prone to PTSD in a combat situation because my fight or flight is constantly stuck in an up position. Like, I'm constantly, you know, quick thinking, quick speaking, which I apologize for, go, go, go. But let's say person C, D, you know, person B, C is both, you know, they're prone to it in a combat situation. Like, they're prone to, you know, even just being away from their family is going to affect them a lot differently than me. So you're going to give all of us this vaccine, but meanwhile you're going to screw me up more than them because I wouldn't have never gotten it from there. You know, and personally, like, in my own opinion, I feel that letting my guard down is kind of a lot of why I did react the way that I did to the situation of being back in the States. But that was because of the fact that I literally never had a downtime. Like, I didn't take downtime. And then it was just the fact that I was a firm believer of when I left for my deployment, this is how leadership in the military was. And when I got to this new place, I'm like, oh, man, everything just went to crap.
Do you think that it's taken a lot of courage on your part to bring these choices to people? And where can they get their courage to really make the change?
I would definitely say that it is courage. I mean, this isn't something that I would have ever done on active duty because, you know, we're all afraid of, oh, gosh, what happens if someone finds out? Or, you know, what happens if this gets to so-and-so? Am I going to get in trouble? Am I going to go to mass? But, you know, at the same time, too, it comes a time where you need to put your foot down because at the end of the day, what's more important? You know, what people that you work for think of you? Or your own well-being and your own happiness. And just, you know, the reason why I have the courage to stand up now is because of the fact that I don't want the people who are still in there, still active duty, and those who are still suffering to have to suffer anymore and think that there isn't anyone out there standing out for them and that there isn't anyone being their voice. I want to be your voice. Flood my email with questions and comments and things that you want said and things you want to say, and I will say it for you. I don't have to worry about someone giving me a bad eval or someone saying, oh, just for that, you're going on these, you know, on this debt. I don't have to worry about that. So tell me, I'll say it for you. I will help be your backbone. I will help give you the courage. Because you know what? We all know if it's not said or no one says anything and it's not changed, it only gets worse.
I think that's what you're bringing, solutions and choice, and you're putting it in their face by somebody who experienced it. And I think on this project you've put together to be on Alex Jones' show and all of these other shows to help bring this together and working with the Wounded Warriors, and now you've got software in your hands that you can distribute to everybody, and we'll teach them all to do this, and they can be our eyes and ears as we bring all this together. Because certainly the people who caused the problem have no interest in helping decreate or whatever, resolve the problem.
Mm-hmm. They think, you know, the solution comes in a pill form or a vaccine, and that's not how it comes.
Thank you for having the courage to stand up and do this and put it together. It was something that we couldn't do, and I thank the universe and God, whatever God people choose to bow to. I thank them for sending you over here. I'm very privileged to know you.
Thank you.
Happy that you're with us instead of any kind of enemy. Everybody is saying this great show. Thank you. We have run out of time. We've run a little over, but we'd like to encourage all of you, write to Melody, post this particular interview or at least a link to it to all of your Facebook and your chat people. Find out who these people are, let us know, and begin to help us help them. People helping people toward good health. we're not getting any assistance from, I don't want to say Obamacare, but that's the only thing that's coming to my mind. If they're going to take away the benefits, you know, it's us. We've got to do something. So thank all of you for listening. Richard, do you have any final thoughts?
I have steam coming out my ears and other orifices.
I feel bad I didn't let Richard rant.
No, it's just as well that I didn't rant. It's just, you know, to hear your story and to hear the passion with which you're speaking is, you know, amazing. And it's very exciting when you talk about the fact that you had an amazing night's sleep. Because I just think, you know, one of the things that pops into my mind is just the amazing amount of adrenal stress that has occurred to your system. And, you know, it's just like a stunning amount of, you know, stress on a daily basis, just cumulative, the exposure, the reality of the lifestyle, the, you know, threat to life. I mean, just everything, the cumulative adrenal stress that any, you know, soldier receives is just stunning to me, and that they get basically nothing other than, you know, like you said, beta blockers. It's just like, boy, oh boy, could I rant. But I'll just say, I love the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, Richard and I have ranted about a lot of the things, but we've never heard it straight from the horse's mouth, and that really brings it home to gut level and makes us want to do something about it. Any of you know of any organizations near you that would like to have Mel or I speak, please let us know that. Let's spread the word. That's the only way that this is going to happen. And we certainly appreciate you listening. I don't think we have any other shows until the first of the year. I think they have closed down Happy Hour and Vocal Profiling Live so that everybody can be with their families on holidays. Not that you'd choose us over your family anyway, but we've chosen our family over presenting a show. So we'll see you next year. This is the longest day of the year for most of the people in this hemisphere. The shortest daylight, the longest night of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, happy holidays and happy solstice, and we'll talk to you next year.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. Have a great holiday, everybody. And thank you so much, Melody.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.